Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday, April 21st. 33 degrees here in Old Town Park City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, Erica Martin. Good morning.
Good morning. So today we're going to see mostly sunny skies, highs in the mid to upper 50s. I'm going to go with 57 for today, and overnight lows just above the freezing mark, 34 degrees. Wednesday, 54 is your expected high temperature with mostly sunny skies, but I do want to add that the clouds, I think, are going to develop by midday. So expect a cloudy end to the day with a chance of some showers. Now, I do think that the disturbance that's going to move through is mainly going to affect us on Thursday, with cooler temperatures, but I still want to add the chance of some showers developing late Wednesday, as far as models right now are kind of picking up on some PM precip for Wednesday. And then the end of the work week, it looks like we are mainly dry. However, a quick little disturbance could move in and could bring us a scattered shower, I'd say, later in the day on Friday. The upcoming weekend looks fantastic. We're seeing mostly sunny skies, highs in the upper 50s, and we very well could hit low 60s by the second half of the weekend. So a nice stretch of weather overall. We just have to be mindful of those scattered showers that will develop late on Wednesday into Thursday, and an isolated shower on Friday.
Erica, thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Later on in the hour, Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson calling in with details on tomorrow's Park City Planning Commission meeting. Recycle Utah Director Carolyn Wara will have a monthly update and celebration of the 50th year of Earth Day. Finally, Park City Adult Services Librarian Kate Mapp with details on this year's One Book, One Community Choice. Stay tuned. And stay tuned. Coming up this morning on This Green Earth, a brand new show. Today's guests include Professor Stephen Hurd talking about his new book, Charles Darwin's Barnacle, and David Bowie's Spider, how scientific names celebrate adventurers, heroes, and even a few scoundrels. Then scientist, author, and former University of Alaska professor Rick Steiner talking about his book, Oasis Earth, Planet in Peril, and how the nature of environmentalism has changed since the first Earth Day 50 years ago. Finally, the Natural History Museum of Utah is hosting the Citizen Nature Challenge. It's an event that encourages aspiring citizen scientists to observe and submit photos of wild plants, animals, and fungi using a free mobile app. That's all on This Green Earth, coming up right after the local news hour at 9:06. Taking a look quickly at local news, residents of Summit County who are struggling to make payments on utility bills will have a pleasant surprise the next time they open their water, propane, or sewer bills. KPCW's Carolyn Murray explains.
Nikola Motor Company CEO and Summit County resident Trevor Milton says he feels lucky to be able to help pay past due bills for neighbors who are struggling. He set aside $150,000 to help. About a third has gone to Camas area residents so far. Milton plans to expand the program to other towns in the county.
Yeah, I primarily wanted to help people directly connected to me in my community. That was a big one for me. So rather than sending money off to a charity where you would never see it, you would never know what it went to, or you would never even know if it helped any of your neighbors that were struggling. So my number one goal here really was I decided I wanted to call the mayors. I wanted them to have skin in the game.
He wanted to structure the donation in a way that engages municipalities and other individuals to participate in giving during this time of COVID-19 layoffs and business shutdowns. He's already heard from many others interested in how he worked with cities and towns to put the program in place.
So I wanted the whole community to rally together, and that was the idea. The mayor agreed to discount all the past due bills by 25% if I came in and paid them all off. I was really hoping to try to set an example for other people in other cities and states to do the same thing.
Camas Mayor Matt McCormick says it was an incredibly generous gesture, and when contacted with the offer, they calculated the total amount of past due utility bills owed to the city. Milton then wrote out a check for 75% of the total. McCormick says Camas City waived the remaining 25%.
I don't even know a name of who this impacts, and it's better that way because it really is just whoever, regardless of name, regardless of whether they make a bunch of money and just didn't pay their bill, or we just did not discriminate. It really doesn't matter to me what name. It's just that was a fantastic offer.
Milton says he has been approached by people who he's never met, and he hopes his example will inspire people to help each other in this difficult time.
I'm running a big company, and But I'm still trying to find time to help, and that's what I think everyone needs to do is just take a little bit of time, help the neighbors around them, even if they can't do anything financially. I mean, just go help people. You know, do something to, like, show support in your community, and I think people are going to know the time for us to finally come together rather than be divided over politics.
Nikola Motor Company is an American hybrid truck design company based in Phoenix, Arizona. It was started in Salt Lake City in 2012 and is named after Nikola Tesla. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
KPCW News time now, 8:12. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Summit County Council meets tomorrow starting at 2:30 in work session. You can start logging into the Zoom meeting at 2:15. On the phone to preview the agenda, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start with the fact that the Council of Governments, COG, is meeting tonight starting at 6 o'clock, also by Zoom. It looks like there's a review of projects to be financed with transit fees or corridor preservation fees. Are there changes for any of these projects because of the COVID-19 outbreak?
I think that's going to be one of the discussion items tonight. Right now, we kind of deal with those sales taxes, and these are the transportation project sales taxes, not anything to do with transit, and then the corridor preservation monies that come from DMV fees. Eventually we're going to have to deal with what this year's sales tax collections will be. But these are monies that are already in the accounts based on previous years that then get allocated out to projects.
Okay, so the projects that were budgeted will be completed then?
That's our expectation, that's correct.
Yeah, and what kind of estimates are we thinking of a loss to this fund?
You know, it's hard to know yet. I would guess that, as we've been projecting a downturn in revenue for our general fund and municipal fund, which is already also supported by sales taxes, I'm sure we are going to see similar decreases from all of our sales tax sources, so those that go into transit and those that go into transportation projects.
Okay. Any project out there, though, that you had really hoped to see finished?
You know, I think so, if you'll remember, one of the things that we've done is we have bonded against that revenue source. So that's the first priority, is to make sure that we're able to make our bond payment. I would expect that it will slow down our program to some extent, and we're going to have to take a look at that in relation to both Park City and ourselves. Both of us have programmed projects against that taxing source, whether they were supported by the bond or whether they're supported as we call them, the pay-as-you-go projects.
All right. Let's see, the regular county council agenda beginning with a legislative update at 2:30. There's a report there from Attorney Jamie Bracken on the legislature's special session. No staff report, but can you tell us what happened to the county's proposal to allow you to use the TRT, the wrap and restaurant funds for COVID concerns?
It is still being debated. That bill we expect to be taken back up on Thursday. We're hearing different things from either a lobbyist or Jamie, who's keeping track of that, or UAC, that's also helping with that issue. We think it's still on track in some form. There's a lot of different opinions about different taxing sources around the state, so the legislature has to weigh that as well as our opinions.
Okay. Let's see. There will be a presentation on the stabilization work group from Deputy Manager Jana Young and Health Director Rich Bolo. The report says the county plans to move into the stabilization play in mid-May. So will the current health orders then run till about May 15th?
So a lot has happened since we published those letters. That was last Wednesday, Thursday time frame. Of course, the governor's plan has come out. The governor's Utah Leads Together 2.0 plan has come out since then. And then we have issued a press release developed over the weekend that kind of updates the timeline on what Summit County is thinking about as far as both working with industry to develop our operating plans for the next phase, in conjunction with what the governor has put out. So really, we plan to be ready to issue new orders on May 1st. And then we'll be following the epidemiological data to determine what will open at that point. But the most important part right now is that we're in a process of developing the operating plans for the next phase, operating under the orange level of risk projected in the governor's plan. And what that means is that we'll be easing back into business. And each industry will be helping us develop that plan for what that means. And then discussing some thresholds about when that could be further eased based on the data.
So Summit County has kind of really led in all of this in terms of issuing orders and reissuing orders. It sounds like now that the county is going to let the governor be the lead from here on out?
I think what we like about the governor's plan is that it gives us some really good guidance. It really still allows for a lot of difference in our counties, our cities, different geographies in the state, different demographics, and protects that ability for local health departments and local governments to deal with this the way they need to deal with it. But it still provides some general guidance about how the state wants to move through a stabilization and recovery. One of the things that I noticed from the plan is that generally it looks at the May timeframe for getting into the stabilization phase. And then it projects kind of a 3 to 5 month timeframe that minimum will be in that phase. And I think that's a very important thing that we need to be discussing as a community, because it's not going to be a situation where in May we're in stabilization and in June we're in full recovery and back to normal, or the new normal as the plan projects. We're going to be in stabilization for quite a long time. So we have to build our protocols around our industries properly so that we can move into that and be able to operate in that method for a while.
So yesterday, April 20th, was the deadline for the county to get applications from sector representatives. That seemed like an awfully quick time for people to get it together. Did you get some applications, and how many?
We got over 180 applications, or around 180 applications. The community is very willing to help out, as we all would expect from our community. But we have a lot of people anxious to participate in this and to help craft what's next, because I think everybody's interest is to when the data tells us it's the right time to be figuring out how to get back to business. And one of the beauties for a lot of our industries of doing this in May and in the May timeframe is that, you know, it's generally a shoulder season, a little slower. It's before regular summer starts, or how we usually look at our summer. So it's going to give us some time to put those protocols in place when the data allows us to, and test those out and get our workforce back trained, get our businesses open, all of that type of stuff. And so we're going to be rolling into the slow, but May is going to be our testing time frame.
So these were supposed to come from business sectors, not individual applications. Did you get individual applications, and do they get thrown out?
Well, I mean, we got individual applications from people that represent sectors of business, and that's how we treated it. So we really, whether that was a group of people that said this is the person that we'd like to nominate, or an individual that nominated themselves, we looked at all of that to determine who would represent. But at the end of the day, we're going to have a lot of people helping each of those representatives. It's just a point of contact, really, to help us have somebody that we can contact and is going to help us organize that industry group to provide the input.
Yeah, I guess I can't even think of 180 sectors, and I guess that's why I'm confused. I mean, Summit County would love to have that many.
Yeah, exactly. There were people that applied that were representing the same sector. So what we'll do in that case is real estate, as an example, we'll appoint one person But then we'll have that person work with those other people that applied to help us come up with those protocols for that industry.
Okay. Can you run through a couple of the, or the maybe the top sectors that you, real estate, restaurants?
Well, I mean, real estate is one of them, lodging, restaurant, retail, personal business, personal service businesses like salons, spas, nail salons, those types of places. Small storefront fitness, yoga studios, CrossFit, Orange Theory, that type of thing, and then large recreation. So our field houses, the Mark, Woodward, and then we have the resorts as well. So that's just the ones off the top of my head that I can remember from the list.
All right. So today you are scheduled to pick those sector representatives. That's your decision?
Ultimately, it's the decision of the of myself, Rich Bulla, and the work group. But we met on that yesterday on the applications that we had. We got about 15 applications after we had that meeting, and we will include those people in our process as well. And so I think we're ready to put that information out today, really to contact those people and get them hooked up with their staff liaison that will help them provide their input into the process. And then we're still targeting trying to get all this finished so that we're ready to publish an order on May 1st and decide where to go from there.
Okay, so who will you be looking for to be part of this? I mean, is it people that you've already worked with that you know, or is it?
It's a combination of things. I mean, we're not familiar with every business, every industry that's out there. So, you know, there's some people that we have not met before that we'll deal with. There's a lot of names that you'd recognize as well.
All right. And then these representatives, I understand, will attend a Zoom webinar on Thursday the 23rd as their first representative meeting?
That's correct, and probably their only representative meeting with the larger group. It's more about working with those industry sectors individually to get their input into the process, get that vetted by the health department quickly so that we can put those protocols in the order and have it ready.
All right. Let's see. Under personnel, the agenda, you're considering increasing your deputy appraisers from 4 to 6. How are you doing that when we have a hiring freeze in place?
Yeah, so, you know, the assessor has been, of course, in place now for about a year. She has a little under a year, but she has been evaluating her office. She has a vacancy right now. Due to a resignation that she wants to fill. So one of the actions in the chart of positions is just to reclassify that position from a higher level appraiser to a just a regular appraiser. And then she would like to hire that position. And then in addition to that, she's doing a reorganization within her office and her budget that would allow her to, if the council agrees, to increase to have another appraiser that would be doing condominium appraising. The concept right now is that that if she was allowed to do that, we wouldn't hire that right away. It would be a change in the chart of positions, but it would fall under the hiring freeze that we're under now, and we would keep reevaluating that throughout the year to see if we could hire that, or if we need to figure out that in next year's budget. But the open position due to the resignation, you know, our assessing system, I would consider one of those essential business lines that we do within the county. Our ability to assess property and put a property tax against that assessment and then collect that property tax is the lifeblood not only of county government, but of all of our taxing entities, especially our school districts. So if we're not getting that right, then we're not getting a lot right. So it would be my suggestion that we at least fill that position.
All right. The council will also have a discussion on curbside collection, choosing between soliciting another private contract or doing the service in-house. Is the county still leaning toward the option of another contract?
Well, certainly in our last conversation with the council, it seemed like that's the way they were leaning. But there's a lot of consideration even in that. Now that we're in this situation where our general fund and municipal fund is going to be seeing lower revenues because of sales tax collections, we even need to look at the way we do the next contract, because I'm not sure that we can absorb, say, a $1 million increase in that contract with its escalator, yearly escalators, for 5 years after that if we did a five-year contract. So we have to take a really good look at this, because that's an expensive service within our county. Do we have to raise more revenue in order to pay for that, or do we have to figure out where in the budget to cut in order to afford an increase in cost with that? Because very likely, unless, you know, one of the benefits we have right now is that fuel is a little cheaper. The projection from our experts right now is that contract is going to cost us more if we keep it exactly the same.
Okay. Anything new happening with recycling? I mean, or the composting that we had talked about with yard and food waste?
I think that certainly in the mode we're in right now under the emergency, there's not much happening around that. The scale of which we would have to ramp up to do something like that, and the cost, again, everything that we add into that contract or add into our business around those types of things costs more money. And so we'd have to look at that. And then, you know, the complexity of the recycle industry right now, where there really are not markets for any product within recycling right now. Even cardboard and metal have turned south within the last 4 or 5 months. It makes it really challenging. So the question is, if we continue recycling, that's going to cost us more money because there's no market. So our biggest aim is to keep those things out of the landfills. And if there's no market, what's the alternative? So it's a complex problem right now.
Okay, finally wanted to ask you about Matt Leavitt and more budget amendments. I don't see a staff report with details yet. Councilmember Chris Robinson said last week that the council had already addressed the low-hanging fruit. So how painful will the future budget cuts be?
Well, I think it's less painful for the current budget year. Matt and I met with all of our department heads and office holders last week to discuss getting to the numbers that the council would like us to get to around that $5 million mark in order to reduce our expenditures. We're pretty close within our current budgets in doing that. But there's some discussion items to have with the council there. How much risk do we want to take with our equipment and vehicle purchases around our fleet? In regards to balancing, you know, that having replacing vehicles and the equipment on a regular basis to reduce future maintenance costs, that's always a balance. And then, of course, there's some changes to some road maintenance or road building that if we defer some of that too long, then we would have a bigger problem later. We think we've struck that balance within the suggestions that we're bringing forward. Again, this is a discussion item this week that would be brought back for an amendment on the 29th. So we're just seeking input from the council at this point to see if we're in the right direction.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention, Tom?
I think that's all I had today. I want to commend the community, especially all the industry reps that came forward and volunteered. That is extremely helpful to us. To not have to go out and recruit. And so we're just happy that people are wanting to come forward and work with us and help us get this right for the next phase.
Okay. Tom Fisher, Summit County Manager, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:31. KPCW News Time 8:32. Good morning. Well, the Park City Planning Commission will be meeting tomorrow for the first time in more than a month. On the phone with a preview, I have Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Leslie.
So how backed up is the Planning Commission since you haven't met since March 11th?
Not really too bad. We were trying to bring a couple things forward on this next Planning Commission meeting on Wednesday night, but, you know, with trying to do electronic meetings and trying to minimize contact, we're going to go ahead and continue some of the bigger items on the agenda. The smaller items are moving forward like they're supposed to. And, you know, our Planning Commission is working pretty hard under the bold initiatives from the City Council directives to move a bunch of stuff through the system. And we can talk about that when we get to it on your agenda.
Okay. Again, as you mentioned, you are holding off on the work session for the Planning Commission goals, priorities for the land management codes, as well as an amendment that would allow for an alternate on the Board of Adjustment. Why does that need to be done?
So what we're trying to do is make sure that all of our boards and commissions have the same basic criteria of what is a quorum, what's not a quorum, what the noticing requirements are. And in this particular case, there was an anomaly in the code where only the Board of Adjustment could have an alternative, an alternate, but the alternate could not vote except in the case of a quorum. So we're just trying to clean that up in case we get another appeal on some item, and we're just trying to bring all of our boards and commissions into the same alignment so we're not having to try and remember the different rules for Planning Commission, Historic Preservation Board, and Board of Adjustment.
Okay. 445 King Road, conditional use permit for a single-family home here. Is this part of that Sweeney Master Plan?
Yes, it is. This is an approved lot location from the early Sweeney Master Plan. There's already the accessory house up there and a garage and some other utilities. What they want to do is finish up the conditional use permit, which is a requirement of their approval, and do the larger house. But it's not a giant house. It's only on the order of 3,000 square feet, I think.
Okay. Any issues then at this point?
No. This one is mainly process at this point. I think they've done a real good job of meeting, because there's special height requirements up there to keep the house low. The site probably is one of the better wildland urban interface sites in town right now, so that's not an issue. It's only a single family house, so I don't expect additional traffic on King Road.
All right.
Or? Yep.
Okay.
King Road.
All right, let's see. 1064 Park Avenue, a condominium plat, anything here?
No, that's just making a condominium out of a duplex. There's no issues that we can tell.
All right. And then the St. Regis Snow Park residence, we're talking about a four-story building, and this has already been approved years ago?
Yeah, I want to say 2 years ago. Well, to tell you the truth, there's two phases in the Snow Park area of Deer Valley, and I think that's part of the first set of confusions. Everybody refers to this as Snow Park, but this is not the Deer Valley Snow Park. Mm-hmm. This is the St. Regis Snow Park, and it's next to the Black Diamond Lodge. So there were two buildings approved below the funicular in what we call phases 2 and 3. And 2 years ago, plus or minus, they reversed the phasing and started construction on one of the phases to the north. What we're doing tonight or tomorrow night is just approving a change of some lobby space and some accessory uses into an amenity club for the residents of St. Regis. And they're asking for additional memberships to the public. So the building's already approved. Everything's in place. It's not going to change the square footage or not. It looks like it's a minor parking impact because it's not filled up all the time because of the way people rotate through St. Regis. So that's what's going on.
Okay, so does this block off the entrance then to the Snow Park Bakery there, or no? It's above that.
Yes, it is.
Okay, and then...
So when you're looking at Snow Park Lodge, it's over to the left.
Right, and that's kind of where you turn in to get to pick up your cakes and cookies, yeah.
Yeah, it's right underneath the funicular and mm-hmm. Black Diamond Lodge.
Got it. Oh, so there's a trail that goes through there. Is that going to be disturbed?
Nope.
All right.
That won't change.
Let's see. And this, as you mentioned, it's a phase two of St. Regis. Do we have more phases?
There's one more phase, phase three, which is going to go into the south of the funicular. But that one's already been approved as well. It's just a matter of phasing our way through these things.
Okay, so kind of up on the hillside then, huh?
Yeah. it goes up the hillside a little bit, but probably no different than Black Diamond or any other condominiums on the east side of Deer Valley Drive.
All right. Anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, if you don't mind, as I mentioned in the intro here, the Planning Commission is working pretty hard under the direction of the City Council to bring a bunch of study sessions together, especially on affordable housing, historic preservation, master plan developments, sustainability. We're trying to bring the master plan development section of the code into alignment with the affordable housing section of the code. We're looking at the affordable housing section of the code to deal with height and parking reductions. We're looking at the sustainability section of the code to do more about electric vehicle charging stations and work on energy efficiency. We're working to clean up some of the master plan development sections so that they're more readable and understandable. We're working on night sky. We're working on lot combinations in the historic district. And we're working to get the land management code updated to align with the special events code. So it's an entire year's worth of work in order to get the Planning Commission through all these things. And we'll be taking a look at this on the, hang on just a second. It looks to me like we're going to take a look at it on the 20. We'll take a look at the whole list with the Planning Commission. This is what was on for tomorrow night, but we're going to have to move it because of the, it's going on the May 13th Planning Commission at this point to take a look at the entire one-year work plan that the Planning Commission has laid out. And that staff report will be out shortly so that the public understands how many things the Planning Commission is asking us to deal with.
Okay. Hey, Bruce, I need to leave it there. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
KPCW News Time now, 8:40. Well, one of the few places still open in our community is our Community Recycling Center, but the hours have definitely had to change to keep the staff safe there. On the phone with an update from Recycle Utah, I have Executive Director Carolyn Warr. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
So, again, you have decided to allow only hours to people to drop off 5:30 until 8 a.m. in the morning. How's that working?
It's not ideal, but we're still seeing plenty of recycling. I'm actually at the facility today. We kind of have alternating shifts. And the cardboard is pretty much taking up the whole area. We normally need cardboard. And the styrofoam is all overflowing. So it's not an ideal situation, but it's the best thing we can do right now to protect the safety of workers here. We've seen about 400 cars a day. It's just not safe to have that much public interaction with the current restrictions we have. So we did change our hours a little bit. It's working. We're still definitely seeing people come recycle in the evening. So still stuff coming in, just not able to process it as much as we would normally be able to do.
Right. So we had noticed that cardboard stacked up, and they're also near the plastic bag corner. So you just don't have somebody coming to pick it up? Or
no, we on a normal given day, you know, the bag of plastic bags will get full, and then we'll have staff take that bag out and put a clean, empty bag out. And without having staff here overnight, we don't have a way to do that. So the bags just kind of overflow. The cardboard would normally go inside the compactor and get smooshed into the bin. Again, that's not happening. So cardboard just kind of piling up. So we do have staff here in the daytime kind of just doing a cleanup. And that takes about 3 to 4 hours. So they're going to clean up and then kind of getting ready for it to happen again the next night.
Okay. So this, at one point you had said that if people didn't do it well, that you'd have to shut it down. So it sounds like people are kind of keeping things cleaned up?
Yeah, it's going better than I would expect. It's honestly not that bad. When you come in the morning, it's just a lot of volume. But everything's usually in the right place. People are being respectful. I would remind people that we're not taking any household donations. I know a lot of cleaning out is going on in the house. I've checked with Christian Center and Habitat Restore, and nobody's really taking any donations. So if you're doing any house cleanouts, you need to hold on to them or dispose of them on your own. So we are still seeing some of that and seeing some electronics. And those are just two things we can't process right now. So leave those things at home, hold on. We're kind of hoping that when heard Tom's update this morning, with some opening happening in May, we could probably shift our hours a little bit and hopefully be here with people a little bit more to process materials a little bit more efficiently and kind of open those things back up and see what we can do to improve what we're doing with now.
Okay. So tomorrow, Wednesday, the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, anything we can do to celebrate?
Yeah, big thing. Normally we do a big party up at Wasatch Brew Pub, and we are not doing that. Instead, we're doing an online sign auction. We've got some great items from Sign Erickson, Storm Cycles, Scott, Lodge at Blue Sky, and some golf packages. And then with any item purchased in the auction, Wasatch Brew Pub is matching it with a $10 gift certificate to Squatters of Wasatch. And they are doing curbside service now. So anything that you win in the auction, you automatically get $10 there. And we're going to leave the auction up until the end of the month. And then on the day itself, we're going to feature some of our charm items. These are our funky little, like, contact lenses, oral care recycling, tennis shoes, like the funky things that a lot of people don't know we actually recycle. So we're going to put those outside our parking lot and kind of feature them. And we're going to do a soft plastics collection as well, like plastic bags. And those will all be in front of our center. Our center is blocked off during the daytime with veils and stuff. So those will be outside featured. And we're kind of encouraging people to ride their bike by with their family or walk over with some small things like that in their pocket and come recycle those kind of things. And then we'll also be giving out free wildflower packets. We partnered with Park City Lodging. They're a longtime partner of ours, also a green business. And they gave us some packets of wildflowers so people can come do a little bit of recycling and grab some wildflowers with their family and come say hi to us. We might have some employees in the lot that are able to wave hi and say, hello, happy Earth Day. It's kind of a sad day to not be with everybody in the community on our favorite holiday of the year, but we're going to do the best we can and celebrate in our own way. So come on by and say hi. The weather's supposed to be nice. We'll be sitting in the lot. You can wave at us from afar and be on your way.
Okay. And you also have some educational videos online, like many others. Something to do.
Yeah, totally. It seems like the thing to do right now. We have a few videos up, intro to composting video, and then some hard recycle items. Like, kind of, we took the items we get the most questions on at the center and featured those in another video. And then for any parents or teachers out there that are homeschooling, we have some kids' videos that will be up later today in time for Earth Week and Earth Day tomorrow. Those are like 10-minute long. They're a little bit longer videos meant to kind of put your kid in front of the screen for a little while and have them learn something about natural resources or the 3 R's, reduce, reuse, recycle. So.
Okay. And then you're also doing a pickup Park City. Tell me about this.
Yeah. I think there's a PSA running in on KPCW right now. We're kind of just encouraging the community to get out and clean up the neighborhoods. I've seen tons of people out doing this. It's pretty exciting. You know, people with, you know, parents and a couple kids out picking up trash. We want to be a resource to the community in that. We do have pickup sticks here at the center, and we usually have someone here during the daytime to answer the phone. We can do a curbside pickup stick drop-off if someone needs a stick to pick up trash. We don't have any more bags left, so you have to provide your own bags and find your own receptacle to throw away or recycle what you pick up. But I've seen a difference already in the last month. I think Tim Henney was out there cleaning up with Mary Krista. It's awesome to see our community members out making this place look good just in time for spring and summer.
Okay, and let's see, Spring Household Hazardous Waste Day. This was scheduled for Saturday, and of course it's not happening. What's going to happen instead?
Correct, yep. I've been working with the Sunrise Rotary Club and Summit County, and we just feel it's not safe to do that this year. So I've been working with the landfill superintendent at the county to see what we want to do instead. I think this is a really important event. All this kind of stuff we accept this day is the most hazardous stuff to throw away and hazardous stuff to get into our landfill. So we really got to be careful that we educate the public on what to do with it without this event happening. So more to come on that. I'll probably have more to come on that in my May update. Probably some educational things. And if someone is listening that is holding on to that stuff, not sure, they can call us at the center. I'm happy to help find an outlet for whatever you have. Most options between the landfill and the landfill has a hazardous waste drop-off. And then the police department has a pharmaceuticals drop-off. And I believe both of those options are still available and open. Just take a little more time than, you know, a drive-through event in the spring and the fall. So as I know right now, the fall hazardous waste day event is still on, but still a lot could change between now and then.
Yep.
And our number at the center here is 435-649-9698. Please use that. Please call us. Truthfully, we're kind of lonely here. I didn't realize how much I love the hustle and bustle of the center until it's not happening. So you're welcome to call and chat with us. I think that's something where the community aspect of the Recycle Center is something we are a little lonely without.
Okay. All right, Carolyn, thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you. Happy Earth Day tomorrow.
Yep. That's Carolyn Worrell, Executive Director of Recycle Utah. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:48. Good morning. Well, the Park City Library, Summit County Library, Dolly's Bookstore, and Utah Humanities have announced this year's One Book, One Community Read. It is Pam Houston's 2019 memoir, Deep Creek, Finding Hope in the High Country. And the fun with details, I have Park City Adult Services Librarian Kate Mapp. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad you could make it. So tell us why this book was chosen.
Yeah, so Pam Houston once lived in Park City, and she also is a graduate of the University of Utah. And she came to Camas branch, the Summit County Library Camas branch, in the spring. And when we heard her speak, we thought that this would just be a great one book, one community tie-in. And not only did we read out in the summer, but we felt like her messaging with this book speaks to our community right now with what we're going through. And just to read a quote from her book, is her book is a meditation on how to live simultaneously inside the wonder and the grief, to love the damaged world, and to do what I can to help it thrive. And we thought people are trying to, you know, look at how we can thrive and the world. And we just thought this would be a beautiful read for right now and our community.
Yeah, so is it a book for all ages?
It is an adult nonfiction memoir, but I believe high schoolers could relate to it as well because she speaks so eloquently about her life in the mountains, and the reading level would be of high school level and above.
Okay. So how can people get the book with the libraries closed?
Yeah, excellent. So our e-resources, and when I'm speaking about the e-resources, this is both Summit County and Park City Libraries because we are under a consortium of the Utah State Library System and through OverDrive. And you can download the OverDrive app or the Libby app. And part of an e-resource, we can negotiate for a like a simultaneous use access to a book. And we were able to negotiate that, this book. And so if you go to those apps or online, you can download the e-book, and everyone can do that all at once. There's no hold or waiting queues.
Okay. And again, you said that the hope is that she can come out next fall and kind of do a community gathering and talk a little bit more about the book?
Yeah, she's already scheduled to come out September 10th at 7 p.m. at the Park City Library in the auditorium. And then she will be doing like a writing workshop earlier that day at the Summit County Library.
All right. Tell us a little bit about the work that the library's 3D printer is doing to help with this COVID pandemic.
Yeah, thanks for asking. So on Facebook, there's so much going on there. And the Utah COVID-19 PPE Makers Facebook group was reaching out to anyone in Utah who had a 3D printer. And someone in our community had said, hey, the Park City Library has one. And so that got the ball started. And we, brought our 3D printers and got the file that they were using and set up a collaboration with them. And we were able to move the printers to librarians' houses so that they can print around the clock and not have to come into the library. And so that actually increases the amount that we can produce. Now, the Utah COVID-19 PPE Makers Group is like a nonprofit volunteer-based group, and they have the supplies to assemble and then distribute these masks that we're making to the people that need it the most, so the first responders and the providers that are working with COVID-19 patients. And so we are making parts of the mask, so just the headband part, and then those can go to distribution, assembly and distribution. And one other thing is Summit County Library, they had a 3D printer that was not working, and it turned out that we have the same model, Bacon model, of their 3D printer that ours wasn't working. And so we were able to get the two together, pillage parts from one, and then get one started working. And then that is now at the a librarian's house, printing around the clock.
Okay, again, making headbands then, just as opposed to the plastic covering?
Yeah, so it's the part that is not easily reproducible with, like, just supplies. So the 3D printer has to be printing these headbands, and then also the kind of the bottom piece to secure the shield. And you can go to our website and see a picture of it. There's more information. And if people have 3D printers that want to, you know, at their homes or their work offices, we can get you the file and get you connected with the makers group and start producing them. And so, for example, this group is based out of Cottonwood Heights, and they're distributing all over Utah. But, like, for example, tomorrow on Wednesday at the library, we're saying if you're printing your parts, bring them from 1 to 3 on Wednesday, and there's going to be a pick-up and drop-off. And people who are participating in this can get free filament from the group so that they're not using their own filament, because that is the most cost-burden part of the thing for people.
Okay. Real quick here, the everyone's spring cleaning. We've got boxes of books. Any idea when we can drop them off?
Yeah, that's a great question. So most likely when we can get curbside pickup for people to pick up library items and drop them off, that's when we can get the donations again as well. But that will be a part of the stabilization plan that we're putting together with Summit County Library. So the two library systems are doing this together and then submitting it to the Summit County Health Department. And then we'll just be waiting to hear back on when we can start that up. So once again, just always go to our website, parkcitylibrary.org, to find out more information on when the curbside and the donation can be started.
Okay, and again, with the library books I've got and now read, that just need to hold on to those till when?
That'll be most likely when the curbside pickup starts up. So still hold your items, and then when the curbside pickup does start up, that is when the books are going to be open, and you can put your items directly into the book drop. So we don't want our staff directly handling anything that might be potentially contaminated. And so we are actually doing research and coming up with different scenarios of how staff and public can safely handle, you know, library materials while being healthy. And so one scenario might be is to put the items in the book drop, and these items will go in like a trash bag and wait for a period of time. We're consulting with what other libraries in the nation are doing, and then also American Library Association. They're coming out with a whole bunch of resources for libraries to help them.
Kate, I need to leave it there. Thanks for your time.
Excellent. Thank you.
It's Adult Services Librarian Kate Mapp. KPCW News Time now, 8:57. And joining me now on the phone, the Executive Director of the People's Health Clinic, Beth Armstrong. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning, Leslie, and thank you for letting me come on and just pass along some news to you guys.
Yeah, so go ahead, because we've got some testing happening that you want people to know about. It sounds like a very extended day today.
So the actually today's testing, the Tuesday the 21st, is out at Summit County Fairgrounds, and that's at 202 Park Road in Colville. So anyone in Colville that is wanting to get tested, they're open from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. this afternoon. This is free testing. It's a mobile site, and it's at no cost. Then tomorrow will be the final day of this five-day mobile testing push. Again, we're testing anyone that wants to be tested. We prefer that if you've tested positive that you not come for retesting. They won't test you. But if you've not had the COVID-19 test, and again, it's the nasal swab, and it's for anyone who just really wants to determine if they're safe. Now, it won't obviously keep you from getting the virus, but at least you'll know you don't have it, and then you can continue to distance and wear your mask when you're out in public. Tomorrow's testing will be the final day, and it's at the Eckerhill Park and Ride. And that's Wednesday the 22nd, and the park and ride is located at 2460 West Kilby Road, which is right across the street from Eckerhill Middle School, or elementary, whatever we call that, Eckerhill. And it is tomorrow starting at 9 a.m. until 7 p.m. Over the weekend, we did several of these mobile testing sites, along with the ice rink, which is still testing. We did 1,100 tests combined, so we're hoping that we can finish out these last 2 days strong. You know, every report says that the more testing you do, the better it is for containment. So we just ask that if anyone wants to get tested, you either go to the fairgrounds today or to the Eckerhill Park and Ride tomorrow, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Okay, thanks so much, Beth. Beth Armstrong is the executive director of the People's Health Clinic. You're listening to KPCW Park City.